This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Scott Seidenberg of VSiN will join us, and we will discuss the World Series, the NFL, and what a day in the NFL it was. I'll get to the Yankees here in a minute, as they are 0-2 coming home here for a Game 3 on Monday, trying to get back in the series. So we'll talk about that with Scott. I'll talk about that in a minute. And I'm not going to spend too much time on the NFL other than what a day. I feel like I've spent here a lot of days. I've been here a lot of days talking about, you know, the NFL is about that 3 to 4 o'clock Eastern hour where all the games are close. Your head is on a swivel. This game changing score. That game is changing scores. This team's coming from behind. We haven't gotten a ton of those days this year. Well, we got it all in one day because the Lions bury the Titans 52-14. That was a blowout. Eagles bury Cincinnati 37-17, completely run away in the second half. Other than that, the 1 o'clock Easterns, I think every other game came down to, and we had a lot of football today because it was 8 early, 5 late, no London, no double Monday night, no bye. So it was a jam-packed day of football. Everything else was just what a day. Jets, Patriots, Jets are a disaster. The kicker's a mess. That comes down to the final play. Patriots score late, 25-22. That's a buzzer beater type game. Packs, Jags. Green Bay and Jacksonville here. Packers, Jags. That one, 30-27. Green Bay kicked a field goal on the final play after a lot of back and forth. And Love did get hurt in that game. It was Willis who played pretty well in relief as they win at the buzzer there. Jacksonville was going to let him score a touchdown, too, and Green Bay did the smart thing, said, no, we're going to go down at the 3 or the 4, set ourselves up for a field goal. Jacksonville was trumped in terms of timeouts, and Green Bay kicked it, so that was fun. Atlanta pretty much wraps up the division, I think, because they now have beaten Tampa twice. They own a tiebreaker. They're in first place, and Tampa's got these receivers hurt. That game was Atlanta by 5 after Atlanta had a big lead, safety, touchdown, all sorts of things to get Tampa back in it. Tampa's thrown in the end zone for a Hail Mary, and we'll get to some Hail Mary stuff here in a minute. Tampa thrown in the end zone for a Hail Mary to try and win that game. It falls short, so Atlanta wins. Same sort of thing with Green Bay, Jacksonville, as we had with Arizona, Miami. Miami's up pretty big early. Tua comes back. Looks like Miami, hey, maybe they're going to save their season, get back on track. Arizona down 9 late, rallies, gets a touchdown, gets a stop, gets a field goal on the final play. Same sort of scenario where they set themselves up for a final field goal. And then Ravens, Browns pull the upset. It's amazing when you have a quarterback with a pulse, what that'll do for your team. Browns played inspired. I saw Baltimore dropped a ton of balls, dropped a ton of picks too. You could tell the shadows. It was weird where the light was coming through in the stadium in a way where it's almost like a baseball game where the shadows are a factor affecting like the outfielder. You saw a lot of drops from both sides, especially Baltimore, but Baltimore wins, Baltimore loses, Cleveland wins. Baltimore was throwing the ball in the end zone on the final play. So in same sort of thing, Texans win 23-20. Richardson does some dumb things because he gets the ball down 3 after Texans are in control most of the game. And they have no timeouts. He runs and has a chance. He's got a good 25, 30 something yard run. He's got nobody around him, and he cuts it in upfield to get an extra 4 or 5 yards instead of, you know, turning it right and going out of bounds. And then he dumps the ball off late, and they actually gave Indy another play, another second, which I thought made no sense. It looked like they ran out of time. So just great games all the way up and down the board. And again, we'll have plenty of time here as baseball looks like it's about ready to end. I mean, at the very most, it's ending, you know, another 4 or 5 days. At the quickest, it's over by Tuesday night. So we'll have plenty of time to dissect these games, digest these games, talk about what it all means. That was the early games. The late games weren't as good, but you got a bunch of them. Saints Chargers was a snooze fest. Chargers win easily. Saints switched the quarterback again mid-game. Bills dominate the Seahawks 31-10. Wasn't even that close. Broncos win 28-14. Game leans right on the total as Carolina goes 98 yards in a 2-minute garbage drive. Carolina going 98 yards in Denver on that defense in garbage time of all teams, of all places. They got help from the roughing the passer, but other than that, Broncos win, Broncos cover. Broncos are a pretty good team because they can, you know, they got some weapons, they got a defense, everyone loves to beat up on Peyton, myself included. You got to tip your cap. He's done a good job. They've done a good job, and they're in the mix here to, you know, be at least one of these playoff teams. They haven't been to since the last playoff game they played was they beat the Super Bowl in the they beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl, and that was the 2015 season. So February of 2016. So basically, almost been a decade since they've they made the playoffs here. And then Bears Commanders was fantastic. Commanders led the whole way. It was about to be a terrible loss. Up 12-0. Bears crawl back. Down five, fumble on the two. They give the ball to the backup center. Commanders recover it. And it looks like, all right, it's going to be a Commanders win. Bears get a three and out. Bears have the ball, matriculate it down the field. They score late with 20-something seconds left. Get the two. They're up three. Commanders down to just the final play. They do it. Well, Romo did a good job. He said, hey, I wouldn't throw the Hail Mary yet because there was like maybe 7-8 seconds left. I would throw like a 10-12-yard out, then throw the Hail Mary. It's exactly what they did. And even then, Daniels is running around. It looked like the Bears are getting held left and right, but hey, it's Hail Mary, kind of anything goes on that play. They're not usually going to call that, although I thought they could have and probably should have there. And then the Hail Mary, once Daniels finally gets some momentum, he throws it as far as he can, and it doesn't even reach the end zone, but it gets tipped, it gets batted back, and it's the easiest Hail Mary touchdown you're ever going to see, is the Commanders get an 18-15 win. So great game, great day, and the Chiefs did beat the Raiders 27-20. We're in control pretty much throughout of that game. Raiders were scrappy here and there, but that was pretty much, you know, Chiefs all the way. So, oof, what a day of games. Like I said, 13 games. Usually you get a London game, which takes away from the Sunday slate. You get a couple Monday night games. You get some buys. We had none of that. And it was just a lot of football. 8 early games, 5 late games, just incredible games early, pretty good games late, and just a great, great day of football. Giants play the Steelers Monday night. Steelers are a 6-point favorite. And we'll talk all the football with Scott coming up. But we will also talk World Series. And before I talk to Scott, I'll just say I thought the way the game ended Friday, and that was a horrible loss, man. If you're a Yankee fan, that's one of the worst losses. And if this series plays out like that, I think it's going to play out and the Dodgers do win. That's one of those losses you'll remember forever, because that loss might have cost you a World Series. I didn't think the Yankees were as good as the Dodgers coming in. But to be up late twice, you're up in extra innings, and you're up in the eighth inning, and just so carelessly, you know, you're up a run, Ohtani hits a double, you don't manage the relay throw properly, it gets away from Torres for whatever reason, just Torres being lackadaisical, and he's hit well this postseason, but just Torres being lackadaisical, that leads to the tying run. You're lucky enough to get the go-ahead run again, you're an out away. I thought it was crazy to bring in Cortez, hasn't pitched in 5 weeks. Now, granted, people would say, hey, if he got the final out, nobody would say anything. I get that. But my goodness, that's a tough spot to throw him into. Hill, the other lefty, had been tremendous throughout. And that's just one where, hey, you're not as good as the other team. You can't afford to just give one back. And then you compound it with Rodon's not good Saturday night. And you had a chance, man. You had a chance to steal it Saturday night. Bases loaded, down 4-2. If Judge had done anything in the ninth inning, you probably tie that game. Volpe comes up with the bases loaded. He has an awful at bat. And then they pinch hit Trevino, of all people. Trevino can't hit at all, which is an indictment on everybody that Trevino is a pinch hitter. It's an indictment on ownership for not having, you know, just a better roster, the GM. And there's a saying that your strengths get you into the playoffs, and your weaknesses get you eliminated. In this case, the World Series. Their strengths have gotten them into the World Series, Stanton and Soto. And Judge did his part to get them to the World Series with everything he did in the regular season, did hit 2 home runs in the ALCS. Your strengths get you into the World Series. Your weaknesses get you eliminated. And their weaknesses, which are Rodon can be shaky, but not just that. It goes higher. It goes back to the owner and the GM, because the fact that you don't have anyone better than Trevino to pinch it, I would have pinch hit Dominguez, but you know, they don't feel comfortable throwing into the fire for whatever reason. That's an indictment on Cashman for not getting a deeper roster, fielding a roster with this many holes. And to me, that's the key here. They just have too many holes. And you could point to Judge, and Judge is going to get plenty of grief. If this series does not turn around for Judge and or the Yankees very quickly, Judge is going to hear it. This is going to stick to Judge. He was too great during the regular season to have another postseason like this. I completely understand that. He's pressing at the plate. He can't recognize the breaking ball. He's late on the fastball. He's early on the breaking ball. He's just caught in between now. But you can maybe survive the Judge no-show because Stanton's been so good. Soto's been so good. But you cannot have just an automatic out 7, 8, and 9. Verdugo, Wells, you know, these guys are automatic outs. Volpe's not much better. I know he's been okay in the postseason. Chisholm has played well in the World Series. He was bad in the playoffs. Rizzo, look, he – He pulls the old Roger Dorn. He leans into pitches. He's smart. He's savvy. But you can't have this many automatic outs. If you look across the field, this is the difference between them and the Dodgers. The Dodgers don't have these holes. The Dodgers don't have these automatic outs. It's a long, deep lineup. You have guys like Muncy and Will Smith hitting in the bottom of the order on top of the star power of Ohtani and Freeman and Betts. So the Dodgers are just, in a lot of ways, the old Yankees in terms of not only the depth of the lineup, but the spending. And I've talked about this a lot with the spending. And a little ironic, isn't it, where Jack Flaherty was almost traded to the Yankees, couldn't quite get it done. He ends up on the Dodgers pitching game one. And the Dodgers win that game. Yamamoto, one of the first podcasts I did, Yamamoto was in the mix. Yankees, Dodgers, Mets. Yankees couldn't quite close the deal. Well, the Dodgers did. And people would say, hey, they overpaid. Well, you know what? Six-plus innings, one run, one hit. That's the difference sometimes. Freddie Freeman, now you can say he didn't want to go to the Yankees. But when Rizzo was a free agent and Freeman were free agents, that was the same year. Yankees end up with Rizzo, the much cheaper player, the much worse player. Dodgers get Freeman. So it's organizational top to bottom. It's the ownership. It's the GM. You know, Boone just with his ridiculous bringing in Cortez. I think Boone actually gets too much crap sometimes. People say, oh, man, Boone, what a terrible manager Boone is. You got to move Judge down. Well, I actually wouldn't mind swapping Judge. I think a change could do him some good. Maybe you move him up to two and you bat Soto three. But, okay, you're going to move Judge down. Who are you going to bring up? Are you going to switch him with Stanton and bat him four? Okay. I mean, if that you think that's going to solve it, maybe. But I think Boone gets too much sometimes, even though I don't think Boone is a good manager. So this sets up a game three where it's a must win. That term gets thrown around too much. But this is indeed a must win. They are not coming from 3-0 down. They have to win 4 out of 5 as it is. It is Clark Schmidt, a -155 favorite against Walker Buehler. And I will just say right off the bat, I think this is too high of a line at 155 if you're going to bet it. I know people say, hey, they're home, they're desperate, they're due to win one. I don't know. Looks like Ohtani's going to play. If anything, I would bet the Dodgers here. I have no faith in the Yankees. Life on the line, I think they probably get 2 out of 3 and then lose in 5 and then lose in 6. But I would not be surprised. I the way that game one ended made me think, hey, this is a coin flip. Yankees probably losing 7, but they got a shot. I did not think they had much of a shot after Friday, and I still don't think they have much of a shot against the Dodgers. So we'll see what Scott Seidenberg thinks coming up next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. We are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him on VSiN. You can catch him pregame.com. He is Scott Seidenberg. Scott, a lot to discuss. We will get to the Yankees. We'll have a therapy session, but my goodness, what a day of football. I'll leave the Jets out of this question, and I'll just let you start wherever you want. So much fun, so many fun games. What was your biggest non-Jet takeaway so far today?
That Jameis Winston proved all of us right, and that he can be a starting quarterback in this league, and he was a much better option for the Cleveland Browns, and it made absolutely no sense that the Ravens were as heavily favored as they were against the Browns team that I and many thought got an upgrade at quarterback with Jameis Winston.
Totally with you. It's and I said in my open, it's amazing what a quarterback with a pulse can do. And that's all. It's not like Winston's a top 5 or 10 quarterback. He's just, you know, he's an average-ish NFL quarterback. He can make some plays, and that's all they needed. It makes everyone look so bad for sticking to. I know their bet is made with Watson, but my goodness, I don't know what they do going forward. But yeah, they actually look like a competitive team, and it looks like they just kind of wasted the year, you know, sticking to Watson as long as they did.
Yeah, also, like, my assessment of the Bengals, because part of my handicap on this was that I didn't think the Bengals and Ravens were far off from each other. And the Bengals were 5.5-point favorites at Cleveland last week, and that was Deshaun Watson at quarterback. And then the Ravens were 8.5-9-point favorites over the Browns in Cleveland with an upgrade at quarterback. So I felt it doesn't make sense. The Ravens are not 4 points better than the Bengals. But then after watching the Bengals play here on Sunday, maybe the Ravens are 4 points better than Cincinnati.
Yeah, and that was a good one by Philly. And I've been talking about this with Philly for a couple of weeks, even really since the start of the season. But you could get on Sirianni. The defense has its issues. I don't know that they're like a legitimate, hey, they're going to win the whole thing. But when you can line up Barkley with those two receivers, Smith and Brown and Goddard, to go around with Hurts, who's, you know, look, he's not a perfect quarterback, but he's still pretty good. That's a hell of an offense in a league where, you know, these teams struggle to score points. I still think Philly's a pretty good team.
They still have not scored a point in the first quarter of this season. The only team in the NFL to not do that.
All right, your Jets. My goodness, where are you? I mean, it's over at this point. 2-6. The kicker killed them. I mean, the defense couldn't get a stop when they needed to. I don't know where this is going forward. I don't even know if Rodgers plays next year, wants to play. Just unload here and, you know, where's your head at with them?
Well, you mentioned the kicker. This is the third game that you can make the argument Greg Zuerlein cost them a win. So they're 2-6. Can I make the reasonable argument that if they had a kicker, they'd be 5-2? Like, it's not – or 5-3. Like, it's not crazy to see this record go the other way if they had a kicker. Because literally – he missed the kick against Denver. That really was the difference in the game. You know, missed the kick against Minnesota. Really could have been the difference in the game. Missed the kick here against the Patriots. That, you know, winds up being a difference. Although, you know, they had chances. They could have made the 2-point conversion also, and they didn't. So that it doesn't come down necessarily to one kick, except that Denver one did. So that's one takeaway. The other takeaway is, I don't know. Does like Jalen Milroe, does he look good in a Jets uniform? Does Shedeur Sanders like do anything for you? Like, who are you going to go after here for the Jets with a top draft pick? Because maybe it's just time to just give up for the rest of the year. It's pathetic. This team should never have fired Robert Saleh. Jeff Ulbrich doesn't know what he's doing as a head coach. For the strength of the team to be the defense, and that's why you make your defensive coordinator the interim head coach. But all that's happened in the interim is that the defense has gotten worse, because probably he doesn't know how to be a head coach and coach the defense at the same time. So the defense has been slacking. They would have been better off just keeping him as a DC and made someone like Nathaniel Hackett the head coach or whatever. It doesn't matter. But the Jets defense allowing this Patriots team to score 25 points is honestly embarrassing in its own right.
Yeah, and people can criticize the Rodgers move. I still think, hey, you know what? It's fine. The rest of the team was good enough a couple years ago when they made this move. I don't know what your other option were. You were going to keep running Zach Wilson out there just because it doesn't work.
They won 7 games last year with no quarterback. Nothing. And you thought, okay, well, at least if Rodgers can be a league average
quarterback, absolutely.
But is it him? Is it
the little of everything? I think it's 10-15% of everything. He's not quite as good as I thought. The defense isn't quite as good as I thought. You throw in some missed kicks, you throw in some bad coaching, you throw in some 50-50 games that don't go their way, and you end up with this mess that you have now.
It's pathetic. I mean, this Patriots team, them and Carolina are the two worst teams in the league. And for the Jets to lose this one, 7-point favorites. I know you're on the road and it's a division game and whatever, but I just find myself asking after watching that game, if Drake May plays the entire game, do the Jets lose by double digits? Like, the only reason why they were probably in the game was because of Jacoby Brissett. So now, like, imagine if Drake May played the whole game.
And it's amazing. I had you on a couple days after they played the Patriots the first time, and they were 2-1. You can say, hey, they beat the Patriots, but they looked good. The defense looked good. Rodgers looked spry. The schedule upcoming was favorable. Like, man, this team's going to be 3-1, 4-1, 5-2, whatever. Like, you'd have to squint very hard to see a team that was going to be in the mix with their talent, with their roster, with their upcoming schedule. But it's not to be. Before we move on to baseball, anything in this Monday night game, Steelers-Giants?
The Giants are an embarrassment as well. And I wasn't sold on the Steelers watching that game against the Jets. I thought that Russell Wilson and the offense did not look good in the first half. Yeah, I will admit they looked better in the second half. But if not for a underthrown pass that hits the defender in the helmet and the shoulder, and then George Pickens makes a great play, like, the Jets probably go on to win that game, because the Steelers would have punted again. They were already down 15-6, and the whole game changes with that catch and then scoring a touchdown on that drive, you know, and then also, you know, interception brings them down to the 1-yard line. Like, there's, you know, just like a number of things. That being said, the Steelers want to win ugly. They want to play ugly games. This is going to be an ugly game. I don't know about laying the 6, but I'm comfortable saying Pittsburgh wins in a low-scoring, ugly game, because that's what they do. They play defense. Daniel Jones is not a competent quarterback this year, and the Giants don't really have anything to match up with the Steelers defensively. This is going to be a matchup of two teams that are going to get after the quarterback and two defenses that are going to, you know, not allow a ton of points.
All right, let's get to it. Yankees-Dodgers. Dodgers with a 2-game-to-none lead. We head back to Yankee Stadium for Game 3, where the Yankees are -150 or so favorite for the third game. Does this series head back to L.A. eventually for a Game 6, meaning the Yankees win 2 at home?
I think it does, because if you look at the matchups, they are in the Yankees' favor. The one thing that you have to question is how much will Dave Roberts utilize his bullpen in game number three, knowing that there's no off days and he's got to go three consecutive days here, and game four is going to be a bullpen day. Does he utilize the high leverage relievers in game number three, or does he say, you know what, we can punt on game three because we have to use our relievers in game four. We have a 2-0 lead. As long as we get out of Yankee Stadium with winning one game, we're in complete control of this series. And so it's like a pick your poison, because if you utilize your arms in game three, then you're screwed for game number four. And then game five, it's Gerrit Cole against Jack Flaherty. So you love the Yankees' chances there. I do think the Yankees take at least 2 out of 3. And if you're looking at just a positive sign for the Yankees, history's on their side. I know when they say 77 of 92 playoff series that is go 2-0, the team that's up 2-0 wins. But of the 15 comebacks that have happened when a team is down 0-2, 10 of them have been in the World Series, actually. The most recent in the World Series was the Yankees in 96. But think of the four, and the Yankees actually did it the opposite way. The Yankees lost the first 2 games at home.
Wow, is that the most recent one for a team down 2-0 in a World Series?
It's the most recent World Series. The most recent 2-0 comeback was last year in the NLCS. The Diamondbacks came back against the Phillies. But the most recent World Series comeback was the Yankees. But what's crazy is the Yankees did it the opposite way. They lost the first 2 games at home. When I say history's on their side, is 12 of the 15 comebacks have happened the way that it's set up for the Yankees, where you lose the first 2 games at home, then you have the 3 home games where you can take all 3 home games. And that's the benefit. Sometimes I question the format, the 2-3-2 format, because I do think the 2-3-2 format doesn't necessarily benefit the home team advantage, because there might not be a game six in the series. There might not be a game seven in the series. We know that in the first 4 games, it's even at 2-2. If you asked me what game would I rather have home, game seven or game five, people might call me crazy. I say game five, because you're more likely going to play a game five than you're going to play a game seven. So the Yankees have the benefit of 3-4-5 at home. If they win all three, they'll be favored in all three. The series is going back to LA and they'll be up 3-2.
Man, I'm trying not to get excited, but I will say, as a counter, like, I remember 96 very well. I think you do too. And they got buried by Atlanta the first 2 games. That was a great Atlanta team, but that Yankee team had all-stars, Hall of Famers coming off the bench, Cecil Fielder, Strawberry, Boggs. This Yankee team, man, and it's an indictment on everyone, ownership, GM, the fact that Trevino's pinch hitting for, Wells. There's just, you can't face, especially in the World Series where you're facing a team as good as the Dodgers, you can't have this many outs. You can't have this many just holes in the lineup. And the Yankees just have holes here.
Yeah, Aaron Boone with a lot of questionable managing decisions. Obviously, the Nestor Cortez coming into the game when he hasn't pitched in a month, in a spot where if you wanted a lefty specialist, guess what? Yep. You have one in your bullpen in Tim Hill, and the Yankees probably win that game if that's what they decide to do there. Maybe they don't walk Mookie Betts. They let Tim Hill pitch to Ohtani, get him out. They let Tim Hill pitch to Mookie Betts, get him out, and the game is over. And then I probably would have pinched hit for Volpe in that spot. I know after you pinch run Cabrera for Rizzo at first base, you don't have any infielders left. But I wouldn't have pinch run for Rizzo at first base. I would have maybe held my pinch runner until it mattered. Like, because at that point, you know, the runner on first doesn't mean much to you right now. Like, do you expect Volpe to hit like a gapper double that you're expecting Cabrera to score from first? Like, it's not going to happen. Like, you can pinch run for him when he gets to second base or, you know, something like that. Like, I just would have pinched hit somebody for Volpe there because of how much he had been struggling. And it really was a non-competitive at bat. And then you're right. I mean, Trevino is the guy that you put up there. He swings at the first pitch. It goes to the warning track. Would you be better off there if it was a guy like Grisham? Would you be better off if it was a guy like Jason Dominguez? I would have taken my chances with a lefty up instead of a righty in Trevino. But, you know, that's Aaron Boone for you.
Would you tinker with Judge and maybe look, people that want to move him down the lineup, who are you moving up? I don't buy that. And he's Aaron Judge. You're not going to embarrass him. You know, like Joe Torre has talked about forever, that famous thing where he moved A-Rod down to the 8-hole that he regretted it. It embarrassed him. But you could maybe bat Judge 2, Soto 3. You're not going to really mess with Soto. He's fine no matter what. No matter where you put him, he's fine in the 3-hole. Would you move Judge up to 2 just to do something differently, or you feel like that doesn't matter?
So it's a move that I would make. It's a move that you would make. And I think it makes sense. Though. Of course he's not going to do it. I think it makes sense because you know, it forces Judge to see better pitches, because he's not going to be chasing those, you know, down and away sinkers or sliders, because they don't want to walk him for Juan Soto. So he's going to get better pitches. But then again, you have a guy like Stanton behind him anyway that's supposed to be protecting him. So in theory, the pitches should be the same. Boone won't do it, because if Judge has batted third all season, he's batting third in the playoffs. You're not going to change it now. This is something that these players are such creatures of habit. You're going to keep them on schedule. You're going to keep them with their routine. You know, these guys have like the same exact routine before every at bat. Judge, when he comes into the, you know, when he comes in from right from center field, he knows he's batting third. He can get his batting gloves, his helmet, get a sip of water, do whatever he has to do, go through his routine and see as many pitches as he can before he gets up. I think messing with that to put him at second, if anything, the guy's in his head already. You're going to get in his head even more if you do that.
What do you think is going on with him? Because I don't think it's anything more than, hey, it's baseball. It's a small sample size. He makes hitting look easy, but hitting's very hard. And if this were a best of 37, I'd have no doubt in my mind he would eventually go nuclear at some point. And maybe he's still, maybe Monday's the day where it turns around. I just think, hey, he's chasing the breaking ball. He's behind on the fastball. He's just in a funk. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason for it. We've seen great players. A-Rod, Bonds have bad postseason, be both bad postseason players until they got red hot. Do you think there's any grand reason for this, or just, hey, he's in a funk at the wrong time?
I think it's just, if you take any 2-week stretch of his career, you're going to find moments where he strikes out 80% of the time.
Look at
like,
April.
That's just the facts. Like, baseball is a funny sport because you play 162 games, but yet it comes down to the just 7 that matter the most, right? Or it comes down to, you know, 2 weeks that matter the most when you play, you know, for 6 months. So it's we know how great he is during the regular season. It's not deniable. He is one of the greatest hitters of this generation. He's on his path to being a Hall of Famer. But until he comes through in the postseason, he's always going to carry that stigma. You mentioned A-Rod. Until 2009, A-Rod was a choker in the playoffs. Yep. And then in the ALCS, bats over 400, hits 3 home runs, and is the reason why the Yankees go to the World Series. Still didn't win ALCS MVP that year. That was
he broke the RBI postseason record, division round, ALCS, World Series, the whole thing. He had the most RBI. I think that's been broken since, but he had the most RBIs of anyone in any postseason ever. So
Then CeCe won the MVP that series, because I found this funny because I was looking this up when I was talking, when I was doing my baseball pod with Josh Towers. And we were thinking about the World Series MVP odds. And we're like looking at pitchers. And it's like, oh, can you even include a pitcher? And then I said, well, I'm looking at that 2009 series. A-Rod's out of his mind.
Matsui won it, I think, that year.
Well, Matsui won the World Series MVP.
Yes.
But Sabathia won the ALCS MVP. And if you look at his numbers, he threw 16 innings that series in 2 starts. That means he went 8 innings in each of his starts, allowed just 1 run, right? But think about that. When was the last time you saw a pitcher in the postseason have 2 starts and both of those starts were 8 innings? These guys get pulled in the 3rd inning. They get pulled in the 4th inning. You're never going to see a pitcher go after the 7th. I mean, you know, Yamamoto went deep in that game, you know, the other night, but you're never going to see these guys go into the 8th and 9th inning. It's just so incredibly rare. Unless you get a pitcher that pitches 3 times in a series, that's the only time you're going to get a pitcher MVP. So I throw out all the pitchers for the MVPs.
Would you go Dominguez for Verdugo?
Yes, because I just can't stand Verdugo.
Me too. I can't watch another fucking hard Verdugo at bat. Part of me wants him to lose the next 2 games so I don't have to see him on my team anymore.
So 2 things frustrate me. 1, the video of him blowing the bubble while he's chasing the ground ball in the outfield. Right. So he's chewing his gum. He's blowing a bubble while that was when he slipped, when the ball hit the wall.
Yeah.
And slipped. And it's like the perfect timing of him slipping with him blowing a bubble is like, I mean, hey, great feat of athleticism, I guess. But then the video of him dancing to, Ice Cube before the game and the comment on the video is like, Verdugo forgot which team he plays for. And it's like, no, like you're not a Yankee, bro. Like that's not us. Like, everyone else was pretty stoic in the dugout. Like, it's a World Series game. Yeah, like,
and you just lost a heartbreaker the night before. Yeah, it's 10 minutes before the game. I'm with you.
And this dude's rocking out because he wishes he was still a member of the Dodgers. Like, get him. I can't stand Verdugo.
Can't stand it. But you would agree they're probably not going to put Dominguez in there, right?
You could just to spark the team. But he's also a liability in the outfield.
He is. He is. And there have been a couple times where I would prefer Dominguez. I actually thought about pinch hitting for Verdugo with the bases loaded the other night when they already, I think they had just taken the lead. And Dominguez, hey, man, you hit one up the gap, you hit one out, and you really put that game out of reach. But they just, and then I would have used him instead of Trevino. They just don't do it anymore. They just don't. I don't know. He was so good for them last year. They just won't use him. I don't know.
I mean, we need that. You know, you need that power threat on the bench. And if Dominguez is that guy, great, then use him. But if you don't use him, then there's no point in having him. And it's like the Yankees, like, look at what the Tigers did. I mean, their run fell short, but to have a guy, you know, like a Kerry Carpenter that can come off the bench and just give you that 3-run home run, like that's such an asset. And the Yankees, maybe that guy is, Jason Dominguez, or maybe it's an Austin Wells if you want to start Trevino. But they certainly are lacking in the late innings.
Are you betting this game three? Yankees now -142 at DraftKings. It's, you know, a little, it was a little higher before that. Dodgers -425 for the series. Yankees +330. Any bets, props, World Series MVP, anything you like?
I think the optimism on Ohtani is the reason why we're seeing the line go down for game three. They're saying the tests came back well. He's got strength, and it was just like a slight dislocation. They pop it back in, and he's fine. He's probably going to play. So I think that optimism is the reason why the line goes down. I would attack the Yankees here in this game because we know it's a must-win for the Yankees, which means that there's going to be a short leash on Clark Schmidt. So the high-leverage relievers have to be ready to go. But for the Dodgers, like I said before, it could be the opposite, where they could essentially, you never want to say we're just not going to try and win a game, but they
could
are
punt. They could punt if they get behind early.
They're playing the long game here, meaning you have the luxury of the 2-0 lead. You can afford to say, you know what, do we really want Vesia in the game now? Do we really want Trinan in the game now? Probably not. Let's save Trinan for tomorrow because we might need to get, you know, more than three outs with him. Like there's ways that Dave Roberts is going to have to, you know, manipulate his bullpen. He might just say, Walker Buehler, no matter what happens, you're giving us five complete innings. So even if you get lit up for four runs, you're staying in there.
You ultimately think who wins the series and how many games?
My heart says Yankees in seven. My mind says Dodgers in six.
So I'm.
I tell you this, my best bet, and I don't know how you can make it besides just placing a bet on the Yankees every game, but this series will go back to LA for game six. That is my best bet. The Yankees will not lose two games at Yankee Stadium.
Would you sign right now for going back to LA down 3-2, which means you get two out of three, but you got to win both in LA?
Yeah. It's just extend the series. Just extend the series. And I think that is going to happen. That is the bet that I would make. I am betting that this series goes back to LA for a game six.
I don't have a great feeling about Monday. I think he goes back to LA, but I don't know. The fact that Schmidt versus the top of the lineup, I feel like the Dodgers can smell blood early in that first inning. And man, Ohtani, which I'm sure he's going to play now, Betts, Freeman, a couple runs in that first inning, and that Yankee stadium is going to get so quiet, so tense. If you can get through the first unscathed, feel better about it, but I don't know. Should be a lot of fun.
So I heard a rumor, and you know, we love rumors. We love things that, you know, are happening or whatever. Anyway, the rumor is that, and I think it's actually like a true rumor, but that Major League Baseball is filming a documentary on this World Series. So, if they're filming a documentary on the World Series, do they want it to end early or do they want it to end late and build up drama? We had a historic moment in game one with Freddie Freeman's grand slam. We have a troubling injury with Shohei Ohtani going down. I think we're going to see some dramatic moments from the Yankees over these next three games that just makes for an incredible documentary product.
And not just talking about like the result, not us not getting the result we want, but man, if this ended in four or five, especially four, whew, that would be a big just sort of fizzle out for baseball. You're expecting this great seven game series back and forth, great game one. If it's over 3 or 4 days later, man, that would be a tough one to swallow.
And MLB Productions just shifts focus. And it's like, all right, guys, instead of a documentary on the World Series, let's just make a documentary about Freddie Freeman.
Exactly. Scott, you're the best man. I wish you luck tomorrow. I hope your predictions come true here. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, always on Twitter at Scott's On Air. The Dream Preview straight out of Vegas AM Monday through Friday, and VSiN every Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern time, going through the night as we get you ready for all the NFL Sunday action.
Appreciate the time. We'll do it again soon.
Anytime.
All right. Appreciate you guys listening. Rate, review, subscribe. Appreciate the reviews. I've seen a handful of them come in, so keep them coming. We will be back Wednesday. We'll see if the baseball season will be over. We'll be tied 2-2. We'll find out in a couple of days. Enjoy the games. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.